This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'll be reading the last part of the December chapter of Aldo Leopold's A Sand County Almanac, published in 1948. The title of the chapter is a number, 65290. That number is the band number of a chickadee that frequented the Leopold family's feeders at their farm in winter. Leopold was a bird bander. At the end of the chapter, I'll talk about another wild bird that we know many details about because of bird banding. Bird banding reveals amazing details about birds' lives, especially longevity and movements and endurance. Now, the last part of Aldo Leopold's December chapter. To band a bird is to hold a ticket in a great lottery. Most of us hold tickets on our own survival, but we buy them from the insurance company, which knows too much to sell us a really sporting chance. It is an exercise in objectivity to hold a ticket on the banded sparrow that falleth, or on the banded chickadee that may some day re-enter your trap and thus prove that he is still alive. The tyro gets his thrill from banding new birds. He plays a kind of game against himself, striving to break his previous score for total numbers. But to the old-timer, the banding of new birds becomes merely pleasant routine. The real thrill lies in the recapture of some bird banded long ago, some bird whose age, adventures, and previous condition of appetite are perhaps better known to you than to the bird himself. Thus, in our family, the question of whether chickadee 65290 would survive for still another winter was, for 5 years, a sporting question of the first magnitude. Beginning a decade ago, we have trapped and banded most of the chickadees on our farm each winter. In early winter, the traps yield mostly unbanded birds. These presumably are mostly the young of the year, which, once banded, can thereafter be dated. As the winter wears on, unbanded birds cease to appear in the trap. We then know that the local population consists largely of marked birds. We can tell from the band numbers how many birds are present and how many of these are survivors from each previous year of banding. 65290 was one of seven chickadees constituting the class of 1937. When he first entered our trap, he showed no visible evidence of genius. Like his classmates, his valor for suet was greater than his discretion. Like his classmates, he bit my finger while being taken out of the trap. When banded and released, he fluttered up to a limb, pecked his new aluminum anklet in mild annoyance, shook his mussed feathers, cursed gently, and hurried away to catch up with the gang. It is doubtful whether he drew any philosophical deductions from his experience, such as, all is not ants' eggs that glitters, for he was caught again 3 times that same winter. By the second winter, our recaptures showed that the class of 7 had shrunk to 3, and by the third winter, to 2. By the fifth winter, 65290 was the sole survivor of his generation. Signs of genius were still lacking, but of his extraordinary capacity for living, there was now historical proof. During his sixth winter, 65290 failed to reappear, and the verdict of missing in action is now confirmed by his absence during 4 subsequent trappings. At that, of 97 chicks banded during the decade, 65290 was the only one contriving to survive for 5 winters. 3 reached 4 years, 7 reached 3 years, 19 reached 2 years, and 67 disappeared after their first winter. Hence, if I were selling insurance to chicks, I could compute the premium with assurance. But this would raise the problem, in what currency would I pay the widows? I suppose in ants' eggs. I know so little about birds that I can only speculate on why 65290 survived his fellows. Was he more clever in dodging his enemies? What enemies? A chickadee is almost too small to have any, that whimsical fellow called Evolution, having enlarged the dinosaur until he tripped over his own toes, tried shrinking the chickadee until he was just too big to be snapped up by flycatchers as an insect, and just too little to be pursued by hawks and owls as meat. Then he regarded his handiwork and laughed. Everyone laughs at so small a bundle of large enthusiasms. The sparrowhawk, the screech owl, the shrike, and especially the midget saw-whet owl might find it worthwhile to kill a chickadee, but I've only once found evidence of actual murder. A screech owl pellet contained one of my bands. Perhaps these small bandits have a fellow feeling for midgets. It seems likely that weather is the only killer, so devoid of both humor and dimension as to kill a chickadee. I suspect that in the Chickadee Sunday School, two mortal sins are taught. Thou shalt not venture into windy places in winter, and thou shalt not get wet before a blizzard. I learned the second commandment one drizzly winter dusk while watching a band of chicks going to roost in my woods. The drizzle came out of the south, but I could tell it would turn northwest and bitter cold before morning. The chicks went to bed in a dead oak, the bark of which had peeled and warped into curls, cups, and hollows of various sizes, shapes, and exposures, the birds selecting a roost dry against a south drizzle, but vulnerable to a north one, would surely be frozen by morning. The birds selecting a roost dry from all sides would awaken safe. This, I think, is the kind of wisdom that spells survival in chickdom and accounts for 65290 and his like. The chickadee's fear of windy places is easily deduced from his behavior. In winter, he ventures away from woods only on calm days, and the distance varies inversely as the breeze. I know several wind-swept woodlots that are chickless all winter, but are freely used at all other seasons. They are wind-swept because cows have browsed out the undergrowth. To the steam-heated banker who mortgages the farmer who needs more cows, who need more pasture, wind is a minor nuisance, except perhaps at the Flatiron Corner. To the chickadee, winter wind is the boundary of the habitable world. If the chickadee had an office, the maxim over his desk would say, "Keep calm." His behavior at the trap discloses the reason. Turn your trap so that he must enter with even a moderate wind at his tail, and all the king's horses cannot drag him into the bait. Turn it the other way, and your score may be good. Wind from behind blows cold and wet under the feathers, which are his portable roof and air conditioner. Nuthatches, juncos, tree sparrows, and woodpeckers likewise fear winds from behind. But their heating plants, and hence their wind tolerance, are larger in the order named. Books on nature seldom mention wind. They are written behind stoves. I suspect there is a third commandment in chickdom. Thou shalt investigate every loud noise. When we start chopping in our woods, the chicks at once appear and stay until the felled tree or riven log has exposed new insect eggs or pupae for their delectation. The discharge of a gun will likewise summon chicks, but with less satisfactory dividends. What served as their dinner bell before the day of axes, mauls, and guns? Presumably the crash of falling trees. In December 1940, an ice storm felled an extraordinary number of dead snags and living limbs in our woods. Our chicks scoffed at the trap for a month, being replete with the dividends of the storm. 65290 has long since gone to his reward. I hope that in his new woods, great oaks full of ants' eggs keep falling all day long, with never a wind to ruffle his composure or take the edge off his appetite, and I hope that he still wears my band. And that's the end of the December chapter of A Sand County Almanac, Aldo Leopold's wonderful book. This story about bird banding that Leopold wrote makes me think right away of the famous female Laysan albatross named Wisdom, who returns each year to Midway Island in the North Pacific to reunite and breed with her mate. They perform elaborate courtship rituals, and she will lay only one egg. Her wingspan is almost 7 feet, yet her species is considered small among all the albatross species. Her habitat is a wide range across the North Pacific Ocean, and she spends most of her life at sea. People around the world anxiously await word of this wonderful bird's return to Midway Island each year. She is quite famous for good reason. She's more than 70 years old. She's the oldest known bird in the world. And good news, she's been reported to have returned recently to her island breeding place once again. I'll read a bit from the Wikipedia page titled Wisdom, in parentheses, Albatross. Wisdom hatched around 1951 and possibly earlier. In 1956, she was tagged by scientists as number Z333 at the Midway Atoll National Wildlife Refuge. It's likely that Wisdom is older than 70, as when she was banded in 1956, she was conservatively estimated to be 5 years old, the earliest age that the Laysan albatross reaches sexual maturity. The person to attach the first tag was Chandler Robbins, who was a senior scientist at the United States Geological Survey. Chandler Robbins banded more than 300 species and 190,000 individual birds over the course of his career. And as an aside, there's a local aspect to this story. His brother, Sam Robbins, was a Wisconsin treasure, an ornithologist and author who made significant contributions to our knowledge of birds. I will devote time to him in future readings. There's a chapter about him in Sumner Madison's book, A Field. But I digress. Back to Wisdom. The U.S. Geological Survey people have tracked Wisdom since she was first tagged and estimate that she has flown over 3 million miles since 1956, approximately 120 times the circumference of the Earth. To accommodate her longevity, they have replaced her tag a total of 6 times. Laysan albatrosses are colonial, nesting on scattered small islands and atolls, often in huge numbers, and building different styles of nests depending on the surroundings, ranging from simple scoops in the sand to nest using vegetation. They have a lengthy breeding cycle and breed annually, although some birds skip years. Juvenile birds return to the colony 3 years after fledging, but do not mate for the first time until 7 or 8 years old. During these 4 or 5 years, they form pair bonds with a mate that they will keep for life. Courtship entails especially elaborate dances that have up to 25 ritualized movements. Both birds incubate the egg. The male does so first. Incubation takes about 65 days and is followed by several weeks of brooding, after which both parents are out at sea to provide for the growing chick. The chick takes about 160 days to fledge. That's the end of the Wikipedia information that I'll give you today. There's lots more to read about albatross online. Fascinating birds. And don't forget to check the website allaboutbirds.org. Many of your questions about any bird species that you are interested in will be answered at that site. And lots of vocalizations. That's where I found the chickadee sounds. Welcome back, Wisdom, and may she and all albatrosses thrive and thrill us all far into the future. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thanks so much for listening.